Hello, what's up, what's up? Welcome to a bonus episode of the One Inch Barrier. Woo! I am your host, Juan Carlos Ojano, and I hope you're all staying safe and staying healthy, and I think still staying at home. I'm still not vaccinated. It's at the time of recording. What the fuck? All right, so quick reminder that this is a part of the 2017 retrospective where we talk about the films that were nominated alongside Fantastic Woman for Best Foreign Language Film at the 90th Academy Awards. Episodes are available in full on Patreon, and I am excited for this episode. The reason why I'm trying to amp up my energy, because we're talking about Russia's official submission for Best Foreign Language Film at the 90th Academy Awards. That film is Loveless, or in its original language, Nelyubov, co-written and directed by Andrei Zvyagintsev. So for a quick summary, it is about a couple, Zhenya and Boris, that are so not getting along to one another. And they have a child named Alyosha, who is kind of like neglected between their disagreements. And the couple is kind of gearing up towards a divorce against the advice of people around them, especially Boris and his career. And in the aftermath of their extended argument, their son disappears, and what happens is they try to find their son, and that kind of brings them together a bit, but that just unveils the ugliness not only of their relationship but the community that they are living in. So that is Loveless. All right, so for this episode, our guest is from the United States. He's at The Many Rantings of John. I'm so excited. Please welcome John T. Hi, John. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about Loveless. I've seen it a couple times, and so I'm excited because I enjoyed this movie.
Okay. Yeah, I'm happy that you enjoyed this film. I'll save it for later, but before anything else, can you tell the listeners where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, so I write a blog called The Mini Rantings of John. It's focused on classic film as well as some discussions on modern cinema, and then I also talk about the US political scene a little bit, but it's a combination of a lot of my different interests, and we do a lot of retrospectives about the Academy Awards on it. And then if you want to follow me on social media, I am at TMROJ, which stands for The Mini Rantings of John, TMROJ at both Twitter and Letterboxd.
All right, there you go. So I think that's the reason why I actually got to know you, is that you're doing per category. And I'm like, yes, best foreign language film. Yes. Like I love it. And, you're also one of the reasons why I'm kind of updated with American politics, more updated than I am in Philippine politics. Sometimes I'm like, what's happening around me? But I know the gerrymandering that's happening in the state. So like, yeah,
it's happening.
Yeah. So I am
not
so
excited, but it is.
Yeah. But I am so excited to finally be able to talk to you. All right, so when I invited you for Loveless, you're pretty psyched about it. I do now want to know your relationship with this film. Like, when was the first time you've seen it, and what did you think about it, and then what do you think about it now?
So the first time I saw it would have been about a year and a half ago. It was right at the beginning of the pandemic. It was one of the first movies that I got from the DVD Netflix, because I'm still getting DVD Netflix. And so I saw it in conjunction with its Oscar nomination and trying to see all the 2017 Oscar nominees. And I initially really liked it. I had seen some of this director's films before, specifically Leviathan, which was nominated a few years earlier, I believe, for the at the 2014 Oscars. And so I liked it upon repeat in the last couple of weeks, seeing this again. I really enjoyed this movie. I know it's not the kind of movie that you're supposed to enjoy, but I like colder cinema. I like films that sort of play that don't necessarily always have like a consistent beating like heart or theme or soul behind it. There's a coldness to it. And this film is very stark. It's very, it's a commentary on modern life, but also modern Russia. And between the story and I think it's a really cool, slow building tension with a lot of unexpected twists in the film. What you would expect from a drama about a missing child, the movie does not necessarily stay within that realm. And I thought it was just a fascinating sort of movie in general around how it sort of subverts your expectations about modern life and modern marriage.
Yeah, I think I'm on the opposite spectrum. I usually love films that give me a warm hug. I don't know, maybe I just need it. But the thing is, with Loveless, I've also seen Leviathan before this. And I think what I remember the most about Leviathan is that it's really darkly funny. But it never really compromises on both sides of it. I mean, it is hilarious and also subtly depressing on the state of Russian society. When I first watched this, I think I was kind of expecting that tone, which, no, it wasn't going for that. But with this rewatch that I just did last night, you know, what perfect last film to watch for the day. I think what I really respect for what it was trying to do. And it's so decidedly, like I said, cold, studied, and
I would agree. Yeah, it's not a kind of film that you're gonna like want to watch on a rainy afternoon. Even though it seems like the entire film is about precipitation, because it's always rainy or cold in this movie. But it is the kind of movie that I found upon rewatching it, there were things that I noticed. Obviously, rewatching it, you know how it's going to end. And so there were things that I noticed about the way the film unfolds that I hadn't realized the first time I watched it through. And there are a lot of recurring themes in this film, which I thought was really fascinating. But I agree, it's not funny. There's no like dark humor throughout this that's going to be sort of your reprieve from the relatively bleak initial storyline.
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, when I was watching this film, I remember that that trailer for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, like the feel bad film of the year. And I think the film is, it doesn't shy away from being feel bad, but it's doing that in a disturbingly quiet way. It's really very, I think, I also see this with Leviathan, is that it's very observational, and you get a lot of the emotions or the lack of giving the emotions through that certain level of detachment. It's not, it doesn't lack empathy, but I think it's more like the film is letting you sit and be uncomfortable that you're not getting everything easily, not getting every... I mean, personally, I don't think I really know the two characters, the leads, the couple. I feel like I was waiting to see something, but the film was never really giving that. And for that, I respect it for what it was, because it's making us look closer, though it's not the easiest thing to do when you have two forces that are both repelling one another. But I don't judge the film for that. I just thought it was fascinating that the film was willing to focus on two characters that doesn't want to do anything with each other.
I agree, and I'd go a step further even with I don't know that these characters know themselves. I don't think the audience knows, but I don't think they necessarily know what they want. And you see that sort of as the film goes, where they sort of jump from what their goal is in life and what they're thinking about from scene to scene. And there really is no consistency in what they want, other than they want out of this marriage. But it's not clear entirely why or what they think will be better about their lives. And I don't know if we can we get into the ending at some, this is a spoiler, but we're able to spoil. But I think like the ending where they are essentially back to where they are. Like, they're in different relationships. They do get a divorce, but they're essentially the same people. they aren't happy at the end of this. This didn't help their situation, I think is really fascinating to me. And it's sort of a commentary about how these people don't know what they want, but they know they what they want is just something that isn't what they have.
Yeah. And for that, I thought, you know, one of the words that came up to me, because I think I get those like words in rewatches, because like I now know what the story, I don't get busy with the reveal of information. And now I'm more like, what am I feeling knowing the path that this film is going to take? One of the words that came up with me was merciless. And I think with the film providing us that, you know, the characters that are not happy at all, and this film is not even giving us any sort of reprieve, it just digs deeper in that, I don't know, internal misery, or I guess that, I don't know what's the right word, but that these characters are going through. I mean, even before the disappearance, I think the disappearance is just now a manifestation of the long-standing hostility that was happening even before they worded it out. And with a film like this that, you know, with such dramatic material for a family drama, the fact that it's choosing to frame these characters in a very studied way, it wasn't, you know, because I think in those scenes, I'm trying to remember that scene where they were really arguing, and then we see that the child is watching, I don't know, here, listening, and crying. That's a scene where I think in a different kind of film would have been, I don't know, milked for dramatic involvement, like a very close. But I think I see this scene, and I don't think I'm seeing vulnerability exactly. I'm seeing how it really is where when it really gets ugly and there's no easy representation of it. The film doesn't break its visual style in showing us that. So the feeling that I have of being detached for the most part, which intentionally detached, is the same feeling that I'm seeing when I have this emotionally charged scene. And it really creates this dissonance in me that I'm almost helpless, because I feel trapped in that disconnect. And for that, I kind of love that, you know, disconnect and making me feel unsettled with that.
I agree. And I honestly think it's really reflexive in the cinematography. Because if you look at, I mean, the opening scene of the film, well, there's this shots of like sort of a desolate winter scene. But then there's a scene where it's looking at the school.
Yeah.
And the camera is stationary. And this happens like three or four times throughout the film where the camera is just stationary. And it's just, you see action, but you're not seeing outside. There's no moving camera happening. It reminded me of Caché, the Mike Haneke film. And which is so good. But it's very observational in the fact that you as the audience are only seeing what's right in front of you. And I thought that was reflexive of sort of the fact that so often throughout the film, and I know this is one of the more common recurring themes through it, but people looking at screens, and it's sort of, you're looking at this screen and the screen is never moving. And then the same way, this camera's never moving. But I thought the cinematography just in general was really creative in the way that it sort of subverts your expectations. There's two scenes, one with the grandmother and one with the teacher, where the parents have left. And in a more traditional thriller, you might've seen a moment where like you get a hint of how these people are feeling, or are they hiding the children? Because I mean, there is the recurring theme throughout this entire movie that sometimes gets forgotten because it is sort of on the back burner, but like the child is missing and we don't know what's happened to this child. And we have these moments where the camera is just staying on these people. And as an audience, I'm like, are we going to get a hint that they know? Are we going to hint the teacher knows? Are we going to get a hint the grandmother knows? And we don't. And it's sort of that moving on and this sort of very playful, sort of sneaky cinematography almost.
Yeah. And I think the editing really amps up that waiting game for us, where we really see shots extended. It's like you know that feeling when the shot is going on for so long that you're almost anticipating when it's gonna cut, because it's like there's something's up. It's not yet cutting. And with Loveless, I think with those moments when it's just trying to sit us down, or maybe not sit us down, just like stay there and look closer, or maybe not, it's a different way of engaging. It's not something that would the easy path to take, but that makes sense in terms of the themes of the film and the way the world of the film presents like communication. And I think there are certain films where you have to have that match of like visual language and theme, because I think this style of filmmaking in other film might come off to me as, well, what are you trying to say?
Scattered.
It would feel empty or like, what? But with this one, it really makes sense in showing a society that is, spending too long a time waiting, or let us sit in the discomfort. And you know, for example, the title Loveless, and how I'm trying to think of how does this reflect in the film. And you know, when I was seeing the argument scene, like I think that one, but when it was already unfolding, and when the police got involved and in the community, it's a different kind of Loveless. It's wider. And for me, the detached visual storytelling makes sense to me even more. It's really rich, and it glues together.
I would agree. Yeah. And I think the Loveless aspect of it is fascinating, because Alyosha and I, is missing throughout this, but there's not a lot we know about this child. And as the film goes on, we don't learn more about him. He becomes sort of this symbol of this marriage and this symbol of, there's a scene where in the cafeteria where Boris is discussing with a coworker, really the only reason that Boris wants to hang on to his son is because it's going to help him in his career. And but there's not a lot of conversation about what this child who's missing is like. And I think that's really, there's a lovelessness obviously in the marriage, but I think there's a lovelessness towards everyone's attitude towards this child that is missing, and we don't know what happened to him, but we also don't know anything about him. We've seen him in a couple scenes early on in the film, and that's really it. And there's not a lot of hints as to what his interests are, what his hobbies are, what his friendships are like. That's not there. And I think there's a loveless attitude towards him sort of fills up the metaphor of how we treat certain people or treat each other in modern society.
Do you think, you know, because the kid disappeared and that's all this. And I've read some things on the internet on how they were really trying to get that character right, because you know the disappearance has to matter. Do you think it would have been better for the film if we would have seen more of the kid?
I don't think so, because I think then we would have been focused. Because I mean, ultimately, the message of the film is not necessarily what happened to him, because we don't find that out in the end. We don't find the answer to that. I think the more we knew about him, the more vested we'd be in like the search, and rather than the dissolution of the marriage and sort of these two characters, Boris and Zenya, trying to figure out where they're going in life, what's going to happen. And I think upon rewatching it, I had more of a conversation with myself about visually, I was like, okay, so I know how this ends. And so I want to see sort of at what point during the film does it become pretty clear that they're probably not going to find their child, and how do they sort of, how does that dawn on the characters? And I was struck about how little it seemed to care to them until that one moment in the morgue, which is very powerful and a really gut-wrenching scene.
I was also thinking of my question because, I mean, the reason why I'm asking is, like, I don't know. I'm, like, verbalizing my my mind vomit, but...
Do you think that we should have known more about him?
Yeah, but I think for me, I mean, I'm trying to understand where the film was coming from, because for me, before I put, I don't know, some judgment of it, I like to ask questions about... why this decision? And I don't know, for me, the way I could justify that choice, I don't know if you would agree with me on this, is that in some ways, I think us as viewers can also be guilty of the neglect, because we really don't know a lot about him. And when we just, the film, the day that he disappeared is the day that we really follow how the two parents sleep with other partners, and that's what we're following. And I think the film maybe was trying to, like, put us into that experience of neglecting the child. And for a film that doesn't really give a lot, it's a different, I think I'm repeating myself, but it's a different kind of engagement of, like, making you feel without you knowing it, because I think we have some audiovisual clues if a film is trying to immerse us into something. But with this one, it's not really necessarily giving it away, but you're like, oh yeah, I forgot about the kid too. Like,
right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Where is the kid again? Can I help? But that feeling, I think, is a very strategic choice that you mentioned. It's leading to that morgue scene where mortuary, where they are gonna identify a body, which is still a powerful scene.
It's a fascinating scene, because it's another one of the stationary camera moments. We're just looking at the kid, the parents. We aren't seeing the body. And at that point, about an hour and a half into the movie, at least over an hour since we've last seen the child actor on screen, they only flash to him for a second. So I'm trying to remember what the kid looks like, which I think is an interesting trick to talk to the parents, because these parents are not super aware of their child. They obviously know what he looks like more than the audience does in scene, but it is a interesting juxtaposition where I'm like, wait, is that the kid? Is it not? And because you haven't seen him, he hasn't been a part of this life, and it hasn't been a part of these characters' lives. And I think that, at least for me, that was sort of the symbolism, that moment where I don't think it was the child, but it also is a case where we don't know anything about the child, again, underlining that point.
Ah, interesting. What was my reaction to it? I mean, because I remember that shot because that was used in the Oscar clip of this. It was, you know, but I really didn't know. I was like, what happened again? They were saying it was not the kid, but... And my mom were going, you know, back and forth, like, is it the kid? I don't think so. But when...
Had you seen it before the Oscars, or...
I don't think I have. I think I've seen it for the podcast.
Okay.
I thought, with their reaction, I think that's their kid. That was what I thought when I was in the rewatch. Like, yeah, that's when I, because when they said it's not the kid, okay, whatever. But then, and I also remember the shot when they showed a little bit of the kid, like, maybe it's not a kid, but their reaction for me was like, nah, it's gotta be the kid. It's right. Gotta be their kid. And what do you think of that? I don't know if ambiguity is the right word, deciding to not really make it clear on whether it is actually the child or not, and how,
like,
it
that sort of the ambiguity of it, of that situation. I liked it because it also underlined at that point how, little the answer mattered. I mean, the really, like, you know, the disturbing thing about it is like, you don't know what they want from this. I mean, by the end of the film, they just wanted the child out of their life. And that's been the theme the whole film. I mean, obviously they don't want him to die in theory, but we also, more so, I think it's sad. I can't quite tell if it's sadness because they realize their child could be dead, or if it's sadness because this will never be over. Like, if this is not their child, that means they may never have an answer to this question. And this will always be something they won't have resolution on. They'll never know, did he die? Did he stay alive? And they don't seem to care, but I think they care about the fact that they will always have this link to each other through this not knowing. And you see that sort of in the ending where they're going back to the same patterns, but there is that little stream of plastic at the very last shot in the tree, that he threw the plastic into a tree at the beginning of the film. And that's still there, sort of as like, he's always going to be a little bit somewhere in the background of this question of what happened to him is never going to be answered.
Yeah, it is. And also, I think the way that the characters, we saw the characters react to the disappearance, it's more of like, I don't know, it's more of like out of necessity that they have to care, because right, they're the parents were like, the kid is my responsibility or whatever. But I think what
struck me... Do you think they care in that moment? Do you think they care, or do you think it's exhaustion that they're crying about at that point?
I really wish I mean, I think I just cared that... I just thought that it was the kid, but maybe it was just a confronting moment, regardless of it is the kid or not. I honestly don't know. And the shot, the scenes that after the identification of the corpse, I also still don't know what to feel, because like it's a cycle. And at the beginning of I don't know if it's what it is, because you know at the argument scene, I think, I don't know, don't quote me on this, but I think
it's on a podcast.
Yeah, on a podcast. But the character of Zhenya, I think, was saying on the lines that she wishes she could have aborted Alyosha or something like that. And I'm not sure if she's saying it out of spite for Boris or out of spite for Alyosha. Regardless, she doesn't want a situation. But when you're confronted with this, it's like, is it the mother in you coming back, or is it just like the shock of seeing a corpse, or like, I don't know. I think there is there is confusion in that moment that these people felt. And I don't know. Again, I don't know these people. And I've reached the end of the film still not knowing them. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I think it's just, it makes sense within the context of the film. Hey, what's up? Thank you for listening to this preview of this bonus episode. If you want to hear more, please head to patreon.com/theoneinchbarrier. For only $4 a month, not only do you have full access to bonus episodes, but you also get early access to regular episodes. Again, thank you so much, and together, let's break the 1-inch barrier.